This is Frankly MSP, where managed service providers get real.
Hey, and welcome to episode 7 of Frankly MSP, the podcast for managed service providers who want to boost their productivity, efficiency, and profitability. I'm your host, Jennifer Tribe. Well, today I'm talking to Gary Pica from True Methods. Gary has built and sold one MSP and currently has, or I should say, is an investor in another MSP. And that's on top of also running his coaching and peer group program at True Methods. And you may have seen Gary speaking at conferences or on webinars. He's a very busy man. But he and I managed to grab 15 minutes, and we're going to be chatting about a single performance metric called REM, Reactive Hours Per Endpoint Per Month, and how making small changes and tweaks to that number can have huge effects on the overall profitability and health of your MSP. It's kind of cool, actually, some of the stuff that we talk about. Actually, speaking of cool, that's a good segue. I didn't even plan that. Speaking of cool, the MSP Nifty Gifty is starting up next week. If you participated in the MSP Summer Treat Wave in July, this past July, then you'll know how this works. The Nifty Gifty is basically the same thing, but in winter. So it's a 10-day event specifically and specially for MSPs. You get 10 free gifts, one gift a day for 10 days. Plus, there's a $1,500 grand prize that you can win too. And I've got to tell you, the grand prize for this one is awesome. It has things like a quadcopter drone, a $100 Amazon gift card, a Polaroid Instant camera, an Amazon Echo, and all kinds of other really neat stuff. Total value, $1,500. Now, the Nifty Gifty is something that Avik put together with a bunch of other companies in this space. So we're joined by Autotask, Datto, Webroot, IT Glue, and a whole bunch of other fine folks in sponsoring this event and putting up the daily giveaways and the grand prize. All you need to do to get in on it, it's really easy. Just go to avik.com/nifty-gifty. NIFTY-GIFTY and sign up. That's it. And 10 free gifts and a ballot for the grand prize are yours. All right, now let's take a look at what's going on in the world. Richard Tubb and Carl Palachuk join us once again to discuss the latest news and how it affects MSPs.
You're listening to Frankly MSP, brought to you by Avik Networks.
Hi everyone, Richard Tubb here, and I'm joined for another episode of What's Going On by Carl Palachuk. I'm at home here in Newcastle upon Tyne in the UK. Carl, where do I find you this week?
I'm actually home again. Last week was probably my busiest week of the year. I did two road shows. I did San Jose and Oakland, and then I also did a two-book launch of the newest version of Managed Services in a Month and Service Agreements for SMB Consultants.
Oh, fantastic. And what else did you do while you were in San Jose? Just before we came on there, you were telling me about something very cool.
Well, I was very excited to go to the Tech Museum. It's this huge, nicely done museum there. And I was looking for old computers. So I was I was a little disappointed that it was actually a hands-on lab for kids, and there were all of these school kids all over the place. But it turned out there were a couple of really, really cool things.
And that's the Tech Museum of Innovation. Is that the right place I'm thinking of here?
The Tech Museum of San Jose. It's literally like in the middle of their old downtown area. And it's a very nice, very well done museum. The other thing that was really interesting is they had a whole section on computing technology. So they had one game where you take these little, they look like coins or puzzle pieces that are labeled server, workstation, computer, switch, and you organize them. You put them on this plate and it recognizes what's what. And then you move them around until you create a working network. And it gives you this feedback. No, you have to do this and that. And a router has to go between these two pieces. It was really cool because 8 and 10-year-olds were figuring out logically how a network goes together. And there was another one where they have this display with a touch interface of a network and IP addresses moving data between one IP address and another. And every once in a while, there'd be some that were slow and you can isolate those. You'd literally drag them off to a different location and move the slower IP traffic to a different network. And it speeds up the main network. And they have a list there of how fast the network is going. And again, it was just interesting to see how they do different representations than you and I would of what networks work like. And they had all kinds of other stuff, including security stuff. They had one about how do you put together password and how does encryption work? And they showed you, like, as you type, what a hashtag does to your password and why you can't go backwards from the hashtag without knowing what the key is. So just lots of stuff like that where it was super, super interactive. I'm always intrigued about how do you teach little kids programming, right? How do you teach them about technology and networking? Because it will be part of their life forever. And you can't be ignorant about it.
Well, it's interesting. Something you said right at the start there, you were saying you were going along basically looking for the retro computer equipment, because I know that, like me, you're a little bit of a nerd for the old tech. And interestingly, the reason I'm in IT is that I grew up using Ataris and Commodore computers. And so I learned those basic skills of coding, you know, all the fundamental skills for IT that have put me in good stead. And there is some degree of concern, isn't there, that young people nowadays are just looking at IT as a tool and not really understanding the fundamentals of how it works. So it sounds like the Tech Museum have got the right idea there.
Yes. Well, you know, we have a huge deficit of people in what we call STEM, which is science, technology, engineering, and math. The United States has a deficit, especially of women, but just people in general are not going into those fields as much as they did. There was a thing from Microsoft last year that they are expecting a shortage of something like 21 million people to be programmers for artificial intelligence. Well, you know, if I were going to pick a field today, if I were 18, I'd absolutely say, maybe I should go into AI.
Well, as we touched on in a few episodes ago, the sums of money that are being paid to headhunt to poach AI software engineers are astronomical, aren't they?
Yes, yeah. Hundreds of thousands of dollars.
And this is not for startup businesses. You know, this is established businesses trying to get into the AI field. There's some parallels here as well. I've been on the road recently going to IT conferences here in the UK, to MSP conferences. And one of the number one topics of conversation is the skill shortage. And specifically the skill shortage, we're bringing in young people into the IT industry with the necessary skills. So one of the stories that caught my eye this week, and there's actually a couple of links between what you've been talking about with the Tech Museum in San Jose. BBC Technology News reports that the UK is seeking future cybersecurity stars as a result of a £20 million initiative from the UK government to get school children interested in cybersecurity. The Cybersecurity Discovery Programme is aimed at 14 to 18-year-olds and involves online and offline challenges themed around battling hackers. The link between the Tech Museum in San Jose and here in the UK is Bletchley Park, which many people would say is the home of computing here in the UK, is to host a centre developing cyber-based lessons for school pupils. So it's interesting that Bletchley Park here in the UK is going to be the home for sort of developing cybersecurity professionals of the future. And it looks like the Tech Museum across there in San Jose is very similar.
We do have to put tons and tons of money into this. We just don't have any choice. It's either that or fall farther and farther behind.
I actually think this is quite significant, because speaking to MSP business owners, I'm hearing more and more complaints about they're finding it difficult to attract good young people into the industry, and specifically when it comes to understanding the fundamentals of IT. So you talked about IP and packets and routing, or routing, as you would say, at your side of the pond. So interesting to see that both sides of the pond, there seems to be quite a drive to get more school children interested in cybersecurity.
So in the US, we have an organization, CompTIA, and they have a huge initiative to help get more women involved in technology. And, you know, part of their presentation is about that technology isn't about computers. It's not about learning how to program necessarily. It's everything you do. I mean, when you look around your office, you know, whether you're just scanning business cards into the computer or you're working with a cash register or whatever, it's all technology. You know, we can't escape it. And to be ignorant of it puts you at a great disadvantage.
It was interesting, even as a youngster, when I was at school, our computer studies, and I would say I come from almost like the golden age of computer studies here in the UK, growing up in the 1980s, we learned how to use computers from, you know, plug it in and play around with it, break it, fix it, make it better again. But I remember growing up at school that we were taught how to use things like Microsoft Office, but not coding. So, you know, that's just using a tool, isn't it? It's not actually learning how computers work, the fundamentals of them.
Right. And, you know, one of the cool things today is that you have these kits, like you and I were talking just before we started recording about like Arduino, right? If you go to the toy stores right before Christmas, they have robotic kits that you can buy for kids. They have programming kits where you can teach little bitty kids how to program, and or at least the basics of if this, then that kind of behavior. And I think it's very cool. I kind of wish I was 10 years old, to be honest.
One of the other announcements around this free cyber discovery program that the UK government are launching is there's going to be hacker clubs springing up here in the UK. And listen to this curriculum, Carl, and tell me, even if you're not 10 years old, whether this appeals to you or not. The curriculum will cover digital forensic, defending against web attacks, cryptography, programming and ethics of hacking. Sadly, we're a couple of years outside the age range, but I would attend that type of curriculum, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. Well, we have programming. There's a group I belong to called Hacker Lab, and they put on all kinds of things for pretty much anything you want to learn so that you can prototype things. We also have robotics clubs. I have a brother who he works for Boeing, and one of the things they do is sponsor this robotics competition. And so he gets to be, I'm so jealous of him, he gets to be the coach for this high school robotics team that competes at a national level. And they have to, every year they get instructions, you know, you have to build a robot that can do this, this, and this, and put a ball through this square. And then once you get so many points, then you have to climb this ladder and touch this button. And, you know, it's not easy stuff, right? And these robots are like as tall as a person. And so it's interesting that high school students can get involved at that level if they choose to.
And certainly one of the statistics that I picked up on, of course, because there is an end game for this. This isn't just teaching for the sake of it. One of the statistics shows that there's going to be more than 3 million unfilled jobs in the cybersecurity industry by 2021 in the UK alone. And so actually this initiative from the UK government is going to be helping the National Crime Agency, amongst other departments. The National Crime Agency have openly said that they're going to be looking to divert young cyber offenders into security jobs and to almost to cherry pick the best of the bunch from these cybersecurity challenges to move them into government jobs as well.
Yes. And it's not just a corporate thing. It's not like, oh, we have to worry because Yahoo is going to release 3 billion accounts of personal information. We now have governments attacking each other with this technology. And so we need to defend from that. It's not just big, rich governments like the UK or the US. It's all the governments. Pretty much half the governments in the world can use this technology because it's not that expensive. Even if you're paying somebody $350,000 a year, that's nothing compared to what it used to take to run old spy agencies.
So I think it's going to be a story that runs and runs. I'm really intrigued for listeners to get in touch, both sides of the pond and anywhere else in the world for that matter. Here in the UK, we've got an apprenticeship program, which I hear from some MSP owners, we get mixed results. I know you don't have a formal apprenticeship program in the US there or a singular program, but you've got something similar from different agencies, have you maybe, Carl?
Yeah, there are many, many individual programs. I don't think we have a big initiative nationwide, but there's, especially in the Bay Area, all of these companies have internship programs, all of the Silicon Valley companies.
So. Well, I'm interested to hear from listeners. Do get in touch with us at the podcast here to let us know what's your experience been as an MSP business owner of bringing young people into the business. What do you see as the future of hiring and finding the right talent? Is it hacker clubs? Is it the 20 million initiative to get school children interested in cybersecurity? Is it the Tech Museum in San Jose, as Carl's talked about? Do drop us a line and get in touch. But beyond all that, Carl, there's something even more important that's happening this week in tech, and it's your birthday, isn't it?
I'm not sure that's going to make the news.
Well, but, when a legend in our industry reaches a birthday, we should celebrate it. So happy birthday to you. You've taken the time out of your day to record this episode on your birthday. I do appreciate it, Carl.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
That's what's been going on. Thank you for joining us, and we'll look forward to speaking to you again very, very soon.
You're listening to Frankly MSP.
As always, I'll put links to the articles and resources that Carl and Richard discussed in today's show notes at avic.com/franklymsp/007. Now we come to the interview with Gary Pica and the scoop on REM. What is it? Why is it so important? And how can you start to improve it? Let's find out. Hi, Gary. Welcome to Frankly MSP.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. Well, I think many Frankly MSP listeners will be familiar with you and your background already, but for those who might not be, give us a little recap of your relationship with the MSP industry.
A long relationship, 20 years. So in 1996, I bought my first IT company, and we were early on in MSP and figured out some of the things that I'm going to share today. And we were able to scale that company to over 7,000 endpoints under management. It was eventually acquired. For the last 9 years, as True Methods, we work with thousands of MSPs around the world and with training and some software that we have to help them increase profitability and sales, aimed at helping with some of the kind of issues we're going to talk about that we see created today. And I also am an investor in another MSP for the past 5 years right here in the Philadelphia market. Yeah, this is pretty much my life.
Great. So you've got that experience from both sides of the desk as well.
Absolutely. And I also, I didn't want to mention, I run a peer group. So we have 80 companies that we work closely with. So I really get to stay close in all the markets as to what's happening, what's evolving, what issues they're dealing with, and how to solve them.
Great. Well, I know your company, True Methods, one metric that you teach to MSPs is called REM, R-E-H-M. And we're going to drill down on that today. So what is REM and why is it so important to an MSP business?
So it stands for reactive hours per end user per month. And basically what this is, I'll explain to you it technically, and then I'll also explain it from a high level. So basically you take all of the tickets and alerts that you don't bill for. In other words, the things you have to do that are included in your monthly fee, and then all the time that are on all those tickets. So we get that total amount of time, we divide it by the end users you support, and it gives you an idea of what your how much reactive time on average. And the reason we use, you know, an end user is because we want a unit of measure that whether you manage 100 endpoints or whether you manage 5,000, we can equate that. And the other reason we use it as a unit of measure is that everybody has some total amount of technical resources per end user they support. So if you take all of your technical resources and divide that, however many hours you think you bill in, you know, people are billable in a month, 140, 160 hours a month, times your total people in delivery, that's what's available. And most people, when we do it, because we see a lot of these numbers, they have about, give or take, they have about an hour of resources per end user that they support. So we look and we see people that have REM of an hour or 45 minutes. What that's saying is that it's a measure of how reactive you are. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So you have this inventory of time, of total amount of hours that are available. And then it's an inventory that it expires moment by moment. Like you can't store it. And when a moment passed, you can't relive that moment. It's no longer, you know, time that you can use. And so if we can look at those percentages, it gives you an idea of where you are. It's almost like, to me, reactive time is this is a difficult business, and people get stuck at a certain revenue level or a certain profit level, and they don't know why. And it's like they're fighting this invisible force. They take one step forward and they take two steps back. Well, if they measure this, that invisible force is tickets and time. And if you can measure it in a way that's relative to a unit of measure in your business and other businesses, it really is powerful of explaining to you not only where you are, but what you need to do to move forward.
Do you find a lot of MSPs are already tracking this metric, or is it something new that they need to start doing?
In almost every case, it's new. They do track little pieces. They track some time. They have some different metrics they use, but they've never really put it in the concept of what I call it the inventory of time, what their total inventory of time is relative And when they see it, it's kind of shocking. It tells them a bunch of things. So one common thing is they're way more reactive than they thought they were. And so when they're struggling with price and they're saying, well, you know, we only charge $110 a seat on average. And I know we need to be at 150, but, you know, we can't command that price. You know, I say to them, well, listen, 75 or 80% of your resources are doing tickets and alerts. There's only so much value. In fact, it's almost negative value. The more tickets and alerts there are, the less valuable you are to a customer. So you're not going to be able to. But if you can lower your REM and spend more of your available time on, you know, business relationship, high value things that we're doing with, you know, VCIOs and we're doing with standards and alignment, you can afford to have better tools as part of that seat price, okay? Then you can raise your value. And so they see the problem, but they don't always equate it to what's really like a simple way of looking in their business. So the other thing that happens is we find out, we take in and we calculate how many, you know, reactive hours they have in a month. And based on those total hours, it's like, let's say they would need six resources to do those hours. Okay. But they have four people on their support desk. So what they realize is they have six people's worth of reactive time, but they only have four people on the support desk. So what's happening to the other hours? Well, when you look around, people on the project team are doing tickets. The VCIOs or account managers, like everyone now is doing tickets. And that's really what I call the reactive spiral of death.
You're listening to Frankly MSP.
So you're looking at keeping your REM as low as possible. How do you go about doing that if you have a problem with it?
So there's a couple different ways that you can do this. First, I feel like you have to have a dedicated role in process in order to do this. So one thing we teach is a role that we generically call net admin or technology success, which is a role 100% aimed at the customer. All they do is manage your technical standards. They do continuous alignment of your customer's technology against those standards. And then where they're out of alignment, that would be the consulting or VCIO piece where they tell the customer, you know, what the business impact from being out of alignment with your standards. And usually the way they fix it, sometimes it's just some simple configuration changes, but sometimes it's investments that the customer has to make. And when they understand the business impact, and now you have information that you can deal with, you know, not just the technical contact at your client, but you can deal with the decision makers, the owners or the C-level executives, because you're giving them information to make business decisions. So a couple things start to happen. You have a higher level business relationship that's more valuable. They're making better decisions. They're making better investments. And the process of getting them in alignment is going to lower REM over time. We see people that over a year can not only lower their average number of tickets per endpoint, but also the time on those tickets. That's super dramatic, right? When you can lower your reactive time by, you know, 50% or more. And so I think that's huge. Tracking it is one way to get started. And then making every decision you make with that metric in mind, knowing that, and I can give you a rule of thumb. To me, like 30 minutes of REM is the point of demarcation. Anyone who's 30 minutes or more, they're going to continue to struggle with sales profitability. They will get stuck. They're at some point, their noise level will be greater than the number of people and revenue they have. As you work down from that and you start to work down and get into the 15 minute range, now you're the people that are among the top MSPs. And it's the leading indicator that I see. If I can figure that out in different ways, and sometimes it's simple. I'll just ask people, hey, how much recurring revenue do you have? And how many people are on your support desk? And I can just do the math to know that they have too many people relative to their revenue without having them to calculate this. So the next thing you can do is, as you're making every decision with this in mind, I mean, what you're doing at Alvik is a great example. So, you know, more stuff is moving to the cloud, right? And the environments that we need to take care of and the kind of advice that people need is changing. And so making investments in tools that are moving in that direction. So let's just say that, you know, if you have one network issue, right, that comes up, they're the kind of things that if you don't catch them, you're not able to monitor them, you're not able to track them down, you can burn up, one ticket could burn up so many hours that it can throw your REM off for the week or the month. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Those things could really be a time sink.
Yeah. So if you can find a way to get rid of those big things, and now it's not only saving you money and lowering your REM, but they're the kind of things that impact the results of the customer so that they're more productive and they see more value. So dedicated roles, looking at tools like Alvik and others that really can make an immediate impact in terms of getting rid of some of these outlier tickets and what customers experience.
What would you say is the best way to start tracking REM if someone's not tracking it today?
Okay, so the best thing to do, what we teach is we try to get everybody, no matter what size they are, is to get people into defined roles. So we define 5 service delivery roles. One of them is centralized services. So that is your RMM, your cloud services. Alvik would fall into this category. The things you do centrally, you push out. Okay. And then the next one would be the role that I described of standards and alignment. That's our net admin or technology success. Your technology consulting or VCIO. There's professional services. That's the billable stuff, right? The stuff that's all billable. And then finally, support. So even if you don't have full-time roles, if you're small, you should still have a service board or a service queue for each of these roles so that you can track the time and then send all of your tickets and alerts to that support board. So if you get them all on one service board or one service queue, then and you use the statuses properly, so you know when you're actually collecting time, when you're working on the ticket, it's collecting time, then it's pretty easy to report on it once you have that, because you can just add up all the time that you record it and they're all in one area. If you don't have dedicated roles, if you don't have the tickets lined up against those roles, it all just gets mixed together, billable, non-billable, what everybody's doing. It becomes everybody working on everything and you can't untangle it. And by the way, if you don't have these same roles, you'll never know your cost, because the way you figure out your cost per seat is by looking at each of these roles and seeing how many seats they can manage. And that gives you your average cost per seat. So from a whole bunch of perspectives, that's one of the first things we try to teach people. And then focus really on those roles that are going to lower REM and prioritize those over time.
So REM is an incredibly powerful little number. If there was one thing that you wanted MSPs to take away about REM, what would it be?
Understanding this concept, your relationship between your recurring revenue and the number of people you have that are doing tickets is the obstacle. It's what stands between you and maybe some of the things that you think aren't possible. So I meet people and tell them, hey, based on you have 10 employees total, you should be able to generate $1.5 million or more of annual service revenue, recurring, non-recurring. And they look at me and like, well, we only generate $1 million or 1.1 today and everybody's busy. I don't understand how that can happen. Well, the reason they don't understand it is because their REM, is 45 or 50 minutes. And so their value is pegged low. And what's frustrating for them is they think their service is great because they're good at closing tickets, and their customers, when they get CSAT scores, are high. But remember, CSAT scores only measure how happy a customer is. It doesn't measure how valuable you are to them. And so they're happy with you, but you're at $100 a seat. And to make money, you need to be $150 or $160 a seat if you figured out your cost properly, okay? So yeah, that is what they need to really get focused, that this simple concept is the best indicator of to where we are. Think of it this way. If you take all those roles and all the seats you support, you can figure out what your cost per seat is. I call that micro-peakonomics. And let's say that I'm an MSP, which I am, and my cost per seat for tools and all the labor for each of my delivery areas on average is $45 a seat, okay? Now, my REM is low. So my cost for the component of support is $8. It costs me $8 per seat per month for the support role of my $45. Your REM is twice as high as mine, okay? So that means your cost is twice as high. So now you have $45 of cost, but $16 of it is support. When that happens, that means that other $8 that's in that support that not only adds no value to your customer, it reduces the value they see. I can put it into tools. I can put it into the VCIO and net admin role, all the things that build that business relationship, all the tools and focus and time. So you have the same cost as me, but I'm going to command a higher price and I'm going to sell more because I can show how that relationship and those services and lowering these things is going to be more valuable to a customer. Are you with me?
Yeah, that's powerful.
Yeah. So if you can just make this concept, start to track it and make this concept kind of the center of what you're thinking about and start to make decisions in this way, you'll be amazed. When people can just move their REM even 15 minutes, their culture starts to change. How they feel, how valuable they are starts to change. And it really starts that spin up to world-class results.
That's excellent. Thanks so much for joining us today, Gary, and sharing your insights.
I appreciate it. Make it a great day.
That was Gary Pica of True Methods. If you're interested in knowing more about Gary and his MSP math, he calls it Picanomics, we recently recorded an hour-long webinar with him on that topic. I'll put a link to it in the show notes at avik.com/franklymsp/007. I'll also put a link to Gary's site in there in case you're interested in getting in touch with him. And a reminder before I close things off here that the MSP Nifty Gifty is now open. It's 10 days of free MSP gifts, plus a chance to win that $1,500 grand prize. Go to avik.com/nifty-gifty to join the fun. Well, that's a wrap. Thoughts, comments, questions about today's episode? I welcome them all. Please consider dropping a comment on the show notes or leaving us a review in iTunes. In our next episode, I talk to Rex Frank at C-Level Operations about the four levers a service desk manager can pull to affect your MSP's profitability. Till then, this is Jennifer Tribe. Thanks for listening.
Frankly MSP, brought to you by Avik Networks, the most efficient and profitable way to manage your clients' networks. We'll